Hello and welcome to another edition of Medical Minds Conversations with Guthrie Experts. As always, I'm Steve Ostrous, joined by Dr. Corinne Johnston, who is the patient experience officer at the Guthrie Health System, and she is also a practicing family medicine physician. Hi, Dr. Johnston. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm well, thanks. Waiting for the sunshine to start peeking out after a few months of gloomy days, it feels like.
Few months. I think it feels like about 6 months at this point. But yes, it's been pretty rough. For those listening, you know, we bring you this podcast from the Northeast. So it's a whole new world up here.
Yes.
So, you know, today we're talking about something that probably doesn't get enough attention, even though a lot of us have probably have suffered or might suffer from it in the future. And that is repetitive strain injuries. And one thing I found out, Dr. Johnston, is that the annual awareness day is on February 29th. So it really doesn't get a lot of attention. Oh, only on leap year.
Only on leap years, and very timely for us. How did we plan so efficiently?
Yes, I guess it was complete luck.
So, you know, Steve, overuse injuries are really common. We probably don't talk about them enough. And I think excited to delve into it with our guest today. But, you know, in today's society, we're all commonly tied to certain things like our cell phone, where we're typing all the time, or a keypad in front of us. Or for those of us that are still practicing those healthy lifestyles that we talk about on Guthrie Engage, you know, we can get those in our daily workout routines or sports as well.
All right. Well, joining us today is Jim Wagner. He's an occupational therapist with Guthrie. Jim, thanks for being here today.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on. I'm excited about being here with you both. I think it'll be a fun topic, and I think it'll be great to share some of the little factoids and thoughts that we think about repetitive stress injuries as we go through this. So I'm thankful to be here. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome. Well, I think let's just start kind of with the basics. When we're talking about repetitive strain injuries, what are we talking about?
Yeah, it's really a controversial topic. And over the 30 years of practice I've been in so far, it really hasn't gotten any easier. It's kind of almost like clear as mud when it comes to these right here. So over the years, they've been called by various things like repetitive stress injuries, overuse syndromes, work-related musculoskeletal disorders. There's multiple things that have been kind of called. It's really not one specific diagnosis, but under different names. It's kind of like an umbrella that covers lots of different conditions. And so they really stem from their disorders that stem from like awkward postures, sustained forces, abnormal stresses, and also psychological factors, what we don't really think about as much as we should. And I think that's coming out more in the research and as we see this, how this affects someone psychosocially at the same time, not just how they feel, but I remember seeing those commercials that depression hurts and those types of things. These can all lead to physical dysfunction too as well. So I guess to sum it up, I guess some of the literature is kind of call them like this, these disorders that involve just like nerve, tendon, ligaments, like muscle, joint, fascia, and these abnormal micro stress trauma to these particular areas that cause a pain syndrome. So
tell us an example of that just for the listener, like what might be the most common or relative thing you'd see?
Yeah, and it's crazy because it seems like anyone in healthcare, we love to use all these big words that really make it sound really smart. But, you know, it's things like, you know, rotator cuff related shoulder pains, you know, things like these thoracic outlets, tennis elbow, golfer's elbow, cubital tunnel, carpal tunnel, you know, trigger fingers. A lot of times we're seen as nonspecific low back pain, plantar fasciitis. These are all kind of, I guess, in general, these fascial disorders or these, and it basically it's comes down to this unequal stress to rest ratio, causing some negative ability to perform your daily occupation. So we see this significant increase in pain and a decrease in performance. And again, it also has this psychological component to it as well.
Yeah.
Dr. Johnston mentioned, you know, during our intro, before we brought you in, the fact that everyone's using, you know, their smartphones nowadays too. Do you think you're seeing an uptick with that kind of usage too? You mentioned trigger finger or thumb, not sure if it's related to that or making that worse.
You know, I honestly, in my practice as a hand therapist, I'm a certified hand therapist, I'm a strength and conditioning specialist as well. And I've been here at Guthrie for 25 years. We started this program initially, just myself and another colleague. Now we're up to 13 of us with 2 to 3 hand surgeons. So we've really seen some pretty dynamic stuff change across practice patterns over the years, but I haven't really seen a specific increase in like related trigger thumbs and fingers due to the use of phone use. But what I have seen, and we've seen, is a significant increase in number of things like musculoskeletal, neck and shoulder, and also nerve-related things, I think because of these awkward postures we're in all the time. So, you know, and there's a thing I always say, that anything used to its greatest extent sooner or later is going to break. So if we don't, it's not that being in a forward posture with your head hung over a phone is bad all the time, or bad some of the time, but if you do it all the time, and then it just has this cumulative effect over a period of time, and then you don't break out of that pattern, it begins to create this cumulative effect, which can lead to some sensitivity, some of those neural structures that come from your neck all the way down to your hand. So it's really a little bit of everything. Like I said, everything used to its greatest extent, sooner or later, is going to break.
It is. And I think your history, right, is often, well, I don't know what I did to get this, because we don't realize that we're right. doing that posture. Or I always love Christmas time shoulder pain, because we're hanging all the decorations.
Right.
You know, it is interesting how we get there.
Yeah, it's kind of like that frog on the pot thing, you know, as it boils slowly over a period of time, you don't realize, no, it's, you know, and I've seen, you know, it's usually one thing, the straw that breaks the camel's back is one particular thing. And I think it has a lot to do with, again, this whole cumulative effect. Even they're looking at like osteoarthritis is more of, instead of almost like an inflammatory process that the body sees over a long period of time, and the breakdown of tissue is a result of that, or the breakdown of the bone surfaces is breakdown of that over time. But really, these things can affect, you know, I think there's people in a lot more, we need to see talk a lot about this a lot more than we do. And I think you said earlier that we have a repetitive stress injury day, I guess, was it February?
Yeah, February 29th, leap year.
Right. So, you know, and it's kind of funny that we do that. There's some interesting factoids I found. Like in 2007, one study looked at the incidence of 20 to 40% in works at specific work populations, that there is repetitive work related stress injuries. And the cost at that point was $6.5 billion in the U.S. alone. Mm-hmm. So this is not like, it's not chump change, right? It's not like mm-hmm. something that, you know, we don't see a lot of. And it really, I think for a long time, we just kind of touch the surface and we treat the symptoms, but don't really take a look at the underlying pathology or issue behind that. Sometimes we do, and I think we're better at it. You know, and a lot of times what we see in the therapy end of it is the effect. You know, we don't always get to the cause, and that's what we try to do as therapists. You know, we see the various conditions like the neck, shoulder, elbow, wrist and hand, low back, hip and ankle stuff, right, that goes on there. And what we try to do here as well is try to say, hey, listen, we can treat these things, but what brought this on in the first place? And what can we do to kind of help mitigate this a little bit, so you don't have this hamster wheel of pain, feel better. And I'm sure as a physician, you guys probably see that too, as well in your own practices.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I always say it's, you know, we're treating the tip of the iceberg. Let's get underneath it so we can figure out what's causing the problem. And that's hard sometimes. You know, we have patients, I think that they probably the same thing you see. They'll jump right into that. And then sometimes we're a little reticent, you know, we'd rather have a pill and have it get better on its own.
Yeah, I think what's interesting too is we see a significant, between these repetitive stress injuries or overworks, overstress injuries, we see a significant correlation between physical health and the incidence and occurrence of these repetitive stress. And so, you know, there really needs to be almost just a thought change instead of a reactive, more preventative change with these here. And I think we're catching on, being a strength and conditioning specialist. I've been in strength training for 37 years. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen some of our older population who are exercising longer and later on in life, which is a great thing, is that we're seeing some greater health benefits from that as well. And so we just need to kind of let that trickle down into our, I call them industrial athletes. Maybe our people in our everyday, you know, work in the mill, blue collar workers who mm-hmm. really are athletes on their own right, is that they, you know, so helping them figure out ways to kind of not just fix the machine, but help to build, you know, change the oil in the machine, you know, make sure that everything's running well and stuff like that. Those can be simple fixes. And I think we just need to get that out a little bit more. So,
yeah.
A couple things. When you kept talking about posture, and I know you were talking kind of specifically in the moment about using your phone and bending down and things like that, mm-hmm. but I perked up a little bit every time you say the word posture. I got to check myself on that. Now, you know, you talked about, you know, some of the blue collar workers, or maybe people as they age, starting to do a better job at exercising longer and getting prepared for that activity. Is there an age difference in this? Are you seeing it more with older population, or is it younger population with youth sports, things like that? Or is it kind of all over the place?
That's a great question. And it's interesting. And there is an effect between, again, multiple factors, like extrinsic factors like sleep, nutrition, physical activity, smoking, you know, obesity, and then intrinsic factors, things like anatomy. What I mean is that it affects males and females differently and at different times as well. It's really kind of like you get to play super sleuth with this. So, for example, like postmenopausal women may respond differently with tendon and soft tissue issues as opposed to males. Females, we'll use an example. The body's an amazing design. The trapezium is much smaller in the thumb, on the basal joint of the thumb, than it is the first metacarpal. So they're more have a greater propensity to thumb osteoarthritis. So it's really kind of interesting. Even like carpal canal sometimes, and the wrist can be smaller. You know, in general, some of the studies look at it's only about 19 millimeters or 3/4 inch in the carpal canal. Then you add a lot of different awkward postures, pressure, you know, all this stuff together can make the nervous system more sensitive throughout the body. But in general, I've been seeing a lot of our younger folks have these repetitive strain and stress injuries at a much higher rate than even some of our older folks. And the reason is because some of these kids come out playing sports right out of the womb. Yep. And so maybe you've seen in your practice. And so now they've got, you know, wrestling at 3 years old. And then by the time they're out of high school, they've on to, you know, 2 ACL surgeries, a shoulder, bank heart repair, elbow injury, you know. And so we see these in this repetitive cycle, the body never gets this full healing. And so we constantly bombard it. And what's interesting is, especially we've seen this rise, and I've seen this rise in my practice, repetitive stress injuries in youth, say in general, like between the years of 10 and 20 years old, like 15 to 20% of the individual's height is required, right? So 50% of that occurs in about a 2-year period. And my daughter's gone through this too. So then you add sports, gymnastics, the amount of force that comes down on that, dance, esports, baseball, all the stuff in these kids here, and then are just involved in this, you know, 24/7. They may take some time off a little bit here, but not enough to truly recuperate. And it places this population at significant risk for these cartilage breakdowns. So we get articular changes in the joint, tendon insertional issues and problems there, growth plate injuries. And then on top of this, you know, the diet of a teenager is great. You know, they get ready to go out and play some sports, right? So they have a Twinkie and a Pop-Tart, you know what I mean? So they put that in there, and then they go in and they sleep. And then you wonder why they don't perform at the next basketball game, right?
Absolutely. Those were the days, though. You could have a Pop-Tart and a Twinkie and your pants still fit when you woke
right?
up. I mean, there is a level of jealousy.
I'm telling you, I remember the days early on in my training years, I'd go out and work out for a couple hours and go eat a pizza, you know, right afterwards. And now it's like, you know, my 50s, I'm like, I'm lucky, you know, if I don't gain 20 pounds just by looking at a pizza. So it really is a thing. It's really a cultural issue, I think. And, you know, and I've seen some, and in some ways, and I've seen this change over the years. We're starting at least to look at or have the discussion a little more with these things. There's a great book, and maybe you guys have heard this beforehand, and I've just recently come across it. It's called The Body Keeps the Score by Dr. Bessel van der Kolk. And she is she looks at the brain, mind, and body, the healing of trauma. And so basically it's like death by 1,000 cuts, right? So, and she looks at how these physiological stresses, post-traumatic stress, these types of things, the body keeps this memory and this stresses over the years. And so it remembers these injuries. So when an injury occurs later on down the road, the body becomes almost sensitized, and you have emotional responses to that too as well. And what I mean by sensitized is that what previously took a lot more of force and irritation to cause pain now becomes something very small and not very noxious at all. You're like, why am I hurting so much? So this body keeps the score. And so we're not doing a great job at helping people to kind of like, how do we get them from that point to break that cycle and get them back into, you know, their daily occupations without any pain? So, and that leads to, again, you take a look at poor sleep, poor diet, overexertion, emotional stress, and that leads to kind of disaster. So part of us as occupational therapists, we take an adaptive approach and a restorative approach to these things. So when we evaluate somebody for elbow pain or whatever they might come in for, we take a good occupational profile or history and say, what, and tell us your story. And everyone's got a story, whether you want to hear it or not, everyone's got a story. So, yeah. You know, we listen to them and try to say, what can we do to kind of help, you know, break the chain of the cycle of this, you know, pain, you know, cycle that we can kind of help get you back into doing what you love to do again. So,
yeah, I think that's the great question, right? And it's the hardest question, because if you think of like, I can think of two examples. So like a Sievers disease, an ankle pain, the heel of the tendon, the bone grows too fast, the tendon hasn't caught up, and you have these kiddos with repetitive strikes, and you say, okay, we need to rest.
Yeah.
I'm a mom. I've got an 11-year-old. Nolan, don't run around. You know, I look outside, boom, there he goes. Yeah. Or I'm a blue-collar worker and I have to work, right? I have to work. So how do I rest? You know, it's a tough question.
Yeah, you know, and I think this is a great thing. And this is where I think many times we miss the forest for the trees. And it can be simpler than what we really think it has to be. Everyone says, oh, you got to go out and exercise, you know, 5 days a week. And then you got a busy mom, you got someone who's working. But I think it can be as simple as starting with some, you know, of course, we treat what somebody comes in for. We want to help them feel better. When you feel better, you move better. When you become more mobile, you have less pain. You feel better psychologically when I exercise. I know that when I'm in an irritable mood, my wife sends me out to the gym, says go work out because you drive me nuts. So, and that's just the way I am. So, you know, you feel better afterwards, and there's health benefits from that as well. But simple things we can try to help people do is, I think, manage emotional stress and sleep deprivation. I think is the first part of what I take a look at when people come in to see us too as well. And there's some really pretty amazing facts and stuff when it comes to these. If a lot of people don't sleep well, so that healing doesn't occur. So, you know, you have that sympathetic, you know, that sympathetic and parasympathetic, you know, your rest and digest at night while you sleep, and then your fight or flight, you know what I mean? And sometimes we're living in that fight or flight all the time. And so, and then, you know, you add like a lot of caffeine to that, you add some cigarettes, you know, that type of thing, next thing you know. And there are some interesting sleep deprivation studies. That's a huge stressor to the body. So in this 2021 study, looked at healthy males and females and showed that one night of sleep deprivation showed an 18% reduction in protein synthesis. So a significant ability for the body's ability to repair broken down muscle tissue and help to build.
Yeah.
So a 21% increase in cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So, and then you lose muscle mass, the ability to perform load and capacity, and it's a precursor to all these chronic conditions. So you get that, and here you are, and there's a Dr. Samara Cutts, who's in, I think, over in Dubai, and she took a look at and showed some information on four nights of poor sleep decreases the brain's pleasure sensitivity by 23%, and that chronic sleep loss has increased anxiety by 60%. So again, she said loss of sleep rewires this neural input. And so I think if one thing that we can help our patients do is to help them find ways to kind of decompress a little bit, de-stress, and get some sleep. And that's a good start. Even some of my goals, when people come in, they come in and they say, oh, I haven't been able to sleep. I've got this terrible shoulder pain. I get 3 hours a night. So one of my goals might be, great, okay, work patient will be able to sleep eight hours without any shoulder pain at time of, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So that's a huge start.
Yeah.
So I know we can't solve all the world's problems, and that is a perfect start, sleep deprivation. But going back to, you know, youth sports and talking about your history with strength and conditioning, do you think there's a way, and I know this is going to kind of butt heads, right? Because you've got teams and coaches who want to succeed, and you've got players who want to do whatever they can to succeed. How do you think, you know, there may not be an answer, we can come together to say, okay, maybe we're doing a little bit too much. You know, I look at my own son, and, you know, while I'm sure he was going to be the next great pitcher for the New York Yankees, in reality, I'm sure he wasn't, but he had a little league shoulder, right?
Yeah.
So that pretty much took him out of the mix. His growth plates really could never fully, you know,
catch up,
get better from that. And he had to wait and wait and wait and wait. And by the time, you know, the plates fused together, it was kind of too late for him, you know, to be that pitcher at least. So is it talking to coaches more? Is it talking to parents more? Like, Not to blame anybody, everyone wants to succeed. I get it.
No, I agree 100%. Listen, I've got two kids myself. One's 24, one's 19, and they're in sports and they went to school for sports, track, basketball, those types of things. And we've gone through this stuff ourselves. And it's very easy. And whether you're talking about repetitive stress injuries for someone who is, you know, an adult in, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, that age, or if you have someone in high school with a repetitive stress injury, I think it's just a matter of having the discussion. Like, and we all want the best for our kids, that's for sure. I think many times we're already, you know, gunning for the school scholarship and, you know, the second grade, you know. You know, and we want to make sure that they love what they do too, as well. And they are participate in that, but finding balance, I think, is one of the biggest things. And you're seeing more and more college coaches and these types of things looking for three sport athletes, you know, getting some downtime between there too, as well, well-rounded students. I think making sure that a good program also too has a strength and conditioning. You're seeing that more and more. One of my daughter's basketball, travel basketball leagues had a strength and conditioning night, two nights a week, where they partake in that. And that's important because you need to have, you need to change movement patterns. And then with our adults at the same time, if you're an adult, who I've had a person who was at a job at a particular company around here where all they did was move their wrist back and forth like this all day long. And so over a period of time, they began to have no, you know, rest or changes of movement patterns within there. So we began to have some breakdown to come to find out they had some underlying anatomy that was normal, but couldn't take that stress over time. Mm-hmm. So everyone's built differently. So I think you have to have an individualized approach, but at least have the discussion where people can begin to talk about how we can incorporate that stuff into a culture change in those practices. And I think it comes from the parents a lot of times too, as well. They have to be involved in it, that's for sure. And I've seen both good on that, and I've seen both bad. But making sure that your kid doesn't play like three sports in 6 months. Like, my daughter wanted to play like flag football, basketball, and like lacrosse all at one time. And like, listen, kiddo, you got to choose one, yeah. You know. So, and again, remember, think about that thought process when it comes to repetitive stress. Remember, anything you use to its greatest extent sooner or later is going to break. Yeah. Starts from the very beginning. So if we can't get a good handle on it then, how do we expect later on we move into the workforce to not have the same mindset? And again, I'm a gung-ho, love to train, love to do this, but we have to kind of think a little bit differently. If we want to stay in the things that we love to do, we've got to create programs that have balance to them, where they have mobility, stability, motor control, and give us a little rest at the same time in between there. So, and, you know, having those conversations about, hey, are your kids getting more than 4 hours of sleep a night? Or are they on the Xbox when they get home, you know, for, you know, 6 hours talking with their friend, you know, Taiwan or something like that, you know? So I think it's a little bit of everything. And it is not one particular thing that's going to make a change. I think it's going to have to be a global perspective.
Yeah. Gives you the, and you know, the insight that we had, right? Like the stories of the NFL football players taking ballet, right?
Yes.
I think, you know, it's that piece of working a different muscle set, working a lengthening that we kind of went away from, right? Because it didn't seem like they needed that.
You know, even the simple things, like you think of, especially in schools, I don't know about in as a physician or ever, even in physical therapy and occupational therapy, we talked about how to fix the machine a lot of times, but not how to prevent a lot of these things. We didn't talk much about nutrition, right? Mm-hmm. What's a good amount of, what's amount of rest to get there? About the whole, you know, activity modification and exercise. Exercise is medicine. And so, you know, I mean, if you can get people even to do simple exercises, there's a recent study that came out and looked at with knee osteoarthritis, like doing a minimum of like, I don't know, 90 of box squats, like simple things like per day, like, you know, 4 or 5 days a week can help just as much as the surgical end of, you know, issues with things. So, I mean, we really have to kind of get into teaching people that you don't have to get out and be in the gym 7 days a week. You know, it's kind of like the New Year's Eve, like, you know, what do they call those things? Your resolutions. People start, I'm going to exercise, you know, 7 days a week, an hour a day. The gym is filled for the first month. And then 3 months later, it's empty. So, I mean, I'm just saying is like taking some time to unplug, getting some good sleep, finding a way to do that. Healing yourself for a little while. I remember a fella who had came in a while ago, and I forget, he came in such pain with a carpal tunnel syndrome, and that he just wasn't sleeping. And I'm not saying this is related to other musculoskeletal issues, but it can be very much so. And he wasn't sleeping for months. And this was a chronic thing. And I thought, oh, I don't know how much I'm going to be able to do for this fella. So we did some traditional stuff for him, whatever. And he hadn't had any conservative management. And him and his wife came in about 2 or 3 weeks later. And he sat down and he almost had tears in his eyes. And he said, listen, I slept for the first time and I don't know how long. And he said, my wife, he slept for like 8 hours. And he came in the next morning and his wife had to poke him to make sure he wasn't dead. She's like, I just slept. And, you know, and he's like, I think he had ended up going on to do finally having a carpal tunnel release. But we were able to kind of mitigate that and try to put, you know, help something to help calm the symptoms down in order for him to kind of heal a little bit. So, again, I don't think these are big things. I think small changes in things, but consistently over a period of time is much better than having these grandiose thoughts and not having much follow through. So if you're struggling with these kind of repetitive stress stuff, a lot of attempts, just little changes go a long ways.
So once they come to see you, as mm-hmm. much as we'd like to prevent some of these things from happening, mm-hmm. once they come to see you, what are the next steps there? And I know I'm sure it varies, obviously, depending on the injury and the overuse, but what types of treatments are we looking at?
Great. And so if someone comes in with like a shoulder pain or a lateral elbow pain or meter they've had for a long period of time, one of the most important things we do in occupational therapy and physical therapy at the same time, too, is really take a look at, is listen to the person in the interview. Like, what brought you here? There is an old study by, I think, Foreman and Rose. It sounds like, but they're physicians. It looked at wrist pain. And so it sounded like a lawyer's study or something like that. But they looked at it and said, if you just listen to the patient, they'll tell you the diagnosis half the time. And they'll just by listening to what's going on. And so we just listen a lot of times first. And then we determine whether, is it a joint problem? Is it soft tissue problem? And then we try to attack the problem from that perspective on what's going to be to give the person the greatest amount of relief in the shortest period of time. So, and you know, here what we do in our facilities, really take a look at a great evidence-based approach to these as well. And people have, it may be if they have a mobility issue, if something's stiff and it's supposed to be mobile, we give them some mobility exercises to help them with that. And then if we have people that come in, such as we said earlier, that maybe have some hypermobility, that things are moving too well, like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, it's like a genetic disorder that they makes them very flexible. So then we incorporate some motor control stability exercises for them in there. And we dose it based on how they respond to that. Not everyone comes in and starts going to the gym and pounding underneath the bench, you know, 5 days a week while they're in there. We look at trying to modify the activity they come in at and then get them back into a point where they can exercise without pain or move without pain. And we also talk a lot about pain science too as well, is that pain is like a smoke alarm. It's not always a bad thing. It kind of gives us a little bit an idea that something's kind of brewing underneath here. And we let them know that this might be giving us a little bit insight onto what might be going on with you and that it's not causing any damage. It's just letting us know we're going to kind of work with it right here. And I give people this thing they call the 2 out of 10 rule. Like, they can exercise a little bit of pain. It won't be painful. We kind of determine what the offending issue is. And then we say, all right, we shouldn't be any more than 2 out of 10 on this, you know, this perceived scale. It shouldn't last any more for 2 hours and it should be gone within 2 days. So in a little discomfort is okay. And then we get them to kind of understand that a little bit better and not to be so fearful, because people do have these things, this stuff called kinesiophobia. They're afraid of movement. They don't want to move very well because it's painful. And then so they decrease their activity, which is a bad thing, you know. And so I think in that part, again, when we look at that, we try to take a look at it as a whole. Where can we start with to give them something on the first visit there to help dampen their pain and let them know that this is something we can work with together, so I get them through.
Yeah, those are such good descriptions, Jim. You know, I think I'm an osteopath, so a DO, and I think a lot of times patients come in and they say, what's the difference? Why are you here? And I feel like a lot of our bases are the same, right? That there's form and function and there can be musculoskeletal drivers of symptoms. And I think, too, interested in how you described patients. So I think one of the things we often deal with is, you know, a patient might come in with a pain down the arm and we're telling them it's coming from the neck, right? Sure. So one of the things I like to say is our spine's like a circuit breaker in your house. And like, you blow the lights in the kitchen, you got to go down to the circuit breaker to turn it on. And just interested, because I think that's something, you know, when we describe that to patients, it may not be coming right from the wrist, right? It might come from a different place.
Yeah, that's a great analogy. And I think that many times, you know, we talk over our patients' heads sometimes and we give them too much, you know. It's like, listen, man, I don't even know some of these words. Sometimes they come out. I'm like, listen, we don't need a dissertation. We need to know, like, listen, just I love that analogy of the neck. Like, This is why posture is important. If we work here, it's going to maybe calm things down the chain a little bit farther. And so even with our insurance companies, a lot of times they don't know, like, why are you, if this is a problem with your elbow, why are you looking at the shoulder girdle? Mm-hmm. Well, because everything's connected. You know, I think it was Thomas Myers that said there aren't 600 muscles in the body. There's one muscle with 600 fascial connections. So we're all connected, right? And so that's why we need to take a look at these other areas. And I've seen many times where people have come in with, and I'll use one example beforehand, they've seen some people in other places and they've had two surgeries, a carpal tunnel and a cubital tunnel release. And they came in and looked up the chain farther, and there was actually an issue with at the brachial plexus level. There was a tumor, a schwannoma on the brachial plexus. Oh my. Yeah. So they ended up having to have that removed and their symptoms went away. Yeah. So what I mean is, as therapists, we need to take a look at the whole kinetic chain. We can't just look at something in isolation with our patients. Mm-hmm. And to bring it back to that repetitive strain stuff, is that, again, where our foot hits the ground to where the energy leaks out of our fingertips when we're doing reaching, we have to look at how everything impacts our ability. So if someone doesn't have good trunk rotation, doesn't have good flexibility in the trunk, that decreases the amount of motor output they have in their upper extremity because they can't rotate and move again. So, again, so helping them say, okay, listen, if we do X, Y, and Z, this is going to help you here, and this is why. So I think we just need to really take a holistic approach instead of compartmentalizing people. Say, okay, you got finger pain, that's it. We'll see you later. You know, you got wrist pain, that's it. And so we kind of miss the forest for the trees when we treat like that. So
I feel like the two of you were really just geeking out there a lot right there. but I was taking it all in. It was very, very exciting for me. You mentioned, obviously, I've heard of carpal tunnel. Can you talk a little bit about cubital tunnel? I haven't heard that one as much.
Yep. So cubital tunnel is a compression of the ulnar nerve and in the inside part of your elbow here. And so there's a band, an Osborne's band, a ligament that runs across there. There's actually multiple sites of compression. The nerves, as they come out of your, as Dr. Johnson just said, as they come out of that circuit board, out of your spinal column, and there's compression points all the way down through there. So in the medial part of the elbow, over time, you know, that can get compressed to cause some irritability. And so what happens is your hand begins to talk to you. You get some numbness and tingling in the ring and small finger a lot of times. In advanced cases, you begin to get some real weakness of the hand. So that can be caused by, again, multiple things. One thing I'm amazed by is that people who sleep on their stomachs, I don't know how they do this, never, how they put their arm over their head, they get compressions, you know, over time, that can cause some stretch on the nerve. And the nerve itself only takes about 8% stretch beyond its resting length before they get some nerve issues and stuff going on. So there's not a lot of force. So nerves don't like to be stretched or compressed. So when they get that compression at the inside of the elbow, whether it be they're leaning on it all the time or elbow flexion that causes compression there, that leads to that numbness and tingling stuff down the arm and can cause some real weakness. And early on, it's very much correctable. We can do that through nighttime orthotics, some nerve gliding techniques, looking to see where that might be in a given person, a home program. But later on, when those nerve compressions become so compressed, that leads to when you have to have a surgical release, where again, they say this sensory precedes motor. So you get the sensation of tingling every once in a while, and then it gets really bad, and then you get a lot of weakness. So we don't want to get to that part right there. So it's a very common upper extremity related nerve compression, but can respond very well to conservative management.
Yeah. Steve, in medical school, we always learned it was the guitar player. If a question started with a guitar player comes in with, because I guess where they rest, how they rest their arm.
Well, I'll start looking for that in people. You guitar player.
See if there's any truth to that, or if that's just the question the boards give us.
you know what's interesting too about these things as well? Again, I like to take a look at a systemic look at all these things. And I had an individual come in the other day, and they're talking about how, you know, this was some wrist pain, and they're saying, "Oh, it's not just my wrist; it's in my wrist, my left wrist, my knees, my shoulders." And so I said, have you talked to your primary care physician much about this? No, not yet. Well, you know, maybe we need to get some other blood work and stuff done like that. And so, and then they said, well, they did put me on a low dose of prednisone and things kind of went away. So that tells me right there, it's probably not a structural issue that we're going to have, that they need to see their primary care physician. And we can be that person as an intermediary too, as clinicians, to say, you need to get back to see your DO. You get to have to get back and see your primary care physician. And maybe there's some other assessments they can take a look at, or some blood work, something to see if that might be something else going on within the system as a whole. So
And I think it's important to stress, and we had another, I think a physical therapy episode, it might have been on dizziness, and we really talked about the importance. I think sometimes patients come in and they see physical therapy or occupational therapy as more of a hindrance, right? Like, why do I have to do that? I just have to do it so I can get my MRI, when the reality is, if we can fix it with what you're talking about, why would we do a surgery?
Right. Yeah, there's some really good literature that looks at, even with some of these, you know, chronic conditions, we can have an impact on someone's ability to improve over time. And so I think, you know, if that's, you know, if we can kind of, instead of being looked at as a secondary response to things, but as a primary, tertiary part of that, I think we can have much better outcomes. And then we can help guide the individual to a better location, instead of sometimes covering all these bases outside of here and then coming to us as our last resort, where we don't have as much success rate. Yeah. So, you know, once we kind of get our hands on it, and then many times in our profession too, we can help manage these symptoms, these repetitive stress strain issues, through, again, adaptive technologies or monitor these things over a period of time. Mm-hmm. And then that produces less stress on the individual, which is less stress on healthcare overall. You know, and again, this kind of benefits everybody. So I think a lot of this comes down to education, simple things. And we don't see people, gone are the days where we see people 3 days a week, 4 days a week anymore.
Yeah.
We see people like once a week, maybe once other, and we give them the onus of proof and give them the ability to say, you can manage this yourself. Mm-hmm. You have the strength and the ability to do this. Let us help you out with it. We'll be here for you when you need us. So,
yeah. Cause looking at an exercise on a paper, right, or watching a video, you're often not doing it correctly. You're not engaging the right pieces. And I can speak for all primary care doctors and probably multiple specialties by saying, if a patient comes in and says, I want to go see Jim in occupational therapy, I'm going to say, all right, let's get that order in right now.
You know, it's you establish a relationship too like that as well. And that's one of the most important things. You know, you don't establish a relationship with a piece of paper with an exercise on it. You know, when people come in, they want to know, again, that, hey, I've got these aches and pains, that this is X, Y, and Z is bringing this on. This is how I think. You validate that and say, listen, I got it. We can work through this. It's a natural part of life, but we can help you still live a good, solid, healthy, you know, fruitful life by mitigating, and you have control over these. I think some of these, there's this loss of locus of control with this here, and it just spirals. And so they throw whatever at it they can in order to, and like I said, I found that exercise can be the best medicine. So if we help people, not everyone has to be a gym rat, but even just be more active, I tell people to get outside a little bit more, you know, work in the garden. If they can't, then we modify the activity that they do to help them get back into doing that. And I think some people think it's an all or nothing, but that's as allied health professions, we do that. We're movement specialists. So we help people get back. And when they can engage in those purposeful activities that they haven't been able to for a period of time, it gives them better, more control. I'm like, listen, I can do this. So, and then they don't need us after a while, which is great. So.
Well, with a background in journalism, I have to ask the question that any good reporter will ask at the end of a conversation. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Jim, that we haven't discussed that you'd like to get out there?
No, not really. I think that this is a big topic of what we see, and it's an important topic to talk to bring out more and more. I think podcasts are great like this because it gives us opportunity to kind of like talk about these issues that don't get out there as much. I think the biggest thing that people can do to help themselves is, one, acknowledge that they're having some pain and acknowledge that they can get some control back in their life over this. One is work on getting some sleep, managing their diet a little bit more effectively, getting a little more exercise, and then seeking some help out from a primary care, DO, your friendly neighborhood physical or occupational therapist. And then knowing that this is going to take some time. You know, it's a process. You know, Rome wasn't built in the day. You know, once you get control of this and you know that you can move through life with less pain and feel better about that, you have more control, and that's going to give you a better sense of well-being. And once you own that and you get some onus of proof of that's going to give you the outcome you're looking for. And then when you don't have the option, things don't work out so well, that there's always that surgical road down the road, but then that can be managed too as well. So, but other than that, I think, you know, just having these conversations and listening to your patient, listening to their concerns, that's the biggest thing I've found that works out best for everybody. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Jim Wagner. Really appreciate your time. And you've been incredibly helpful to us and I'm sure our listeners.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate you guys very much. And this is a great option that Guthrie offers for their patients and beyond that. So.
Well, thanks to Jim Wagner for joining us today on our podcast. Certainly, I think gave us a lot of things that maybe we know deep down we need to do, Steve, but we don't quite prioritize ourselves. My husband and I were just talking about wellness and putting yourself first sometimes. And I made a comment, I can't remember what about. And my husband said, Corinne, going to bed at 10 o'clock and getting 8 hours of sleep is wellness. And I think there's a lot of truth there. And I think that's what Jim just kind of reaffirmed for all of us in ways we can help ourselves with many different areas of our lives.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I need to follow that advice and yeah, get better sleep, definitely. In terms of going to the gym, you know, he brought it up and different types of exercise. You don't have to be a gym rat. But it's funny, I was talking to my wife, I'm like, I think I'm going to, you know, get a gym membership again, because I've had one in the past. And she was, you know, very, oh yeah, absolutely, sure. So I don't know if that's because she thinks I'm going to be healthier or because she's trying to tell me something. I haven't figured that part out yet. And by the way, I also noticed that everything always comes back to the primary care provider.
Yeah. You know, that was one thing when I took this co-host the podcast with you. I never thought about it, but it is nice to hear how important a good primary care doctor is in your life, I think, in your health and physical well-being.
Yes. So you know what? So everyone loves people like you, Dr. Johnson. You've got to be there to help everyone out.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that.
All right. If you want to learn more about all types of things that can help you with your daily lifestyle, be sure to check out guthrie.org/engage. And there's lots of tips for just living a healthier lifestyle. All right. Until next time, have a great week, Dr. Johnson.
Hey, you too. And don't forget to celebrate the 28th or the 29th.
28th this year, but it's going to be the 29th on leap year.
All right, Steve.
Bye-bye.
Bye.